I won't be able to make it today because I'm at the bottom of the pool. That's how that song, when my baby, we go to Rio de Janeiro. That's how it starts. Never mind. Let's go. All right. Wasted. My all this knowledge is wasted.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective. We are talking about the NBA, which is starting to slow down at last. Joining us from Boston, where she was at the Celtics press conference introducing their Plan A players yesterday, Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter, is Jackie McMullen. Hi, Jackie.
Hello, Brian. How are you today?
Good. And in L.A., doing some TV work, is Ban McMahon. Banned from a lot of places, but not Los Angeles yet.
Howdy, partners.
There's still time. Jackie, there's still time for that to happen.
It's early in the day. It's early in the day.
And I was with Tim McMahon in L.A. last week.
Yeah, you guys were on the red carpet.
Of all places.
That's right.
We had fun.
On the red carpet.
We had ourselves some fun, Brian. We did. We were with the power couple, Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe, which they are two of just like, I am so excited about the future of our country when I think about those two women. They just blow me away. I've known Sue Bird a long time. I've only known Megan Rapinoe now like 40 minutes, and they just blow me away.
Now think about that, you know, that conversation. Megan Rapinoe, Sue Bird, Jackie McMullen, and Ban McMahon. I can only imagine.
Jackie was with them. They had dispersed by the time that I was able to gain admission.
They saw you coming and you got the hell out of there. Yeah.
So Jackie, basically, the place had thinned out some, then they let me in.
that sounds about right. Well, you didn't want to drink any of the hard liquor anyway. You just wanted beer, probably, knowing you.
He wanted free beer, man, and he got it. So there you go.
That's what he likes. Nothing man likes more than free beer. Jackie, you spent some time.
Four-letter words.
Jackie,
yeah, you and Larry Bird,
man.
I did. Yes, I did. We're trying to do the podcast. I know. Yes, I did. I spent some time with
Andrew.
Walker,
gets mad when we have too much chicanery at the start.
Frivolity.
Yeah.
Shenanigans.
Right. He cuts it out later with green teeth.
Sad. Very sad.
So
yes, Kemba Walker.
Kemba?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So I shouldn't probably say this on a national podcast, but here I go. He's just small. Like, I've seen him before. I've, you know, been on a court where he's been, but I was just struck by how I'm amazed even more now by what he accomplishes because he's small. And I don't mean just, you know, not tall. I just mean he's slight. And for Abraham to be able to score like that and shoot like that in an NBA where ruggedness and size and physicality matters. But I will tell you this. He very much wants to make his imprint on the Boston Celtics. One of the things that he said at the very tail end of the interview that really struck me was he said, it's so nice to be noticed because he has been doing some incredible, remarkable things. He was voted third team All-NBA, and yet nobody in his mind has really seen him play. And that was a big reason why he wanted to come to Boston and not only win, but go to a place where there is a tradition and where people appreciate greatness. And then he also said that during a trip with Jordan Brand in Paris with Jason Tatum, he spent so much time with this young guy that, you know, he read a lot about, and Jason Tatum was at times part of the solution and at times part of the problem last year for the Boston Celtics. And really, really loved this kid and loved his enthusiasm and thought, you know what, I really want to play with him. I'm going to go there. So the other thing I learned, as he told me, he's kind of heartbroken that it didn't work out with Charlotte. He really thought it was going to. He really thought he was going to be a Charlotte Hornet for life. This man, he idolized Michael Jordan, who drafted him, whose brand he wears. He's part of the
Jordan
brand.
Wonder how long
brand.
That's going to last.
You know what? It will. I think it will, because he still is enamored with Michael Jordan and just kind of heartbroken that they wouldn't pony up to keep him there.
So you're saying that it's not just Team USA where partnerships are formed, that now the Jordan brand
that's what I'm saying.
Create, yeah.
Yeah, it's everything, right? Everything
well,
is
the thing,
possible.
The thing that's so strange about the Hornets decision, I understand the Hornets saying, look, we understand, you know, he made All-NBA, and so we didn't expect that, and we're not going to pay him the Supermax. I could understand that. But
of course.
To not offer him a max contract,
right.
You know, you have to do your evaluation. Is this guy a max player or not? And that question should have been answered before this season. And if anything, this season should have even more reinforced it. And if the answer to that wasn't yes, obviously they should have moved on before this. And I thought it was strange. Mm-hmm. You know, Jordan almost never gives interviews. He sometimes will give answers to questions or make comments on questions, but he very, very rarely gives or he will take a Q&A. And he actually did that around the All-Star game. And it was very calculated. He did it before the national media got there. He did it like on Monday or Tuesday of All-Star weekend. And there was so much excitement about the event coming to Charlotte, and especially after it had been postponed, that nobody asked him about Kemba. And I think that was the thing. Like, it was easy to forget that there was a real decision here because Kemba was just such a hornet. But, you know, that had to be something that the organization was thinking about for a long time. And you know, the Celtics didn't think twice about giving him. And it was easy for them because, you know, what you're worried about is Kemba when he's 33-ish, you know, at his size. The Celtics didn't have to worry about a fifth year. They could only offer four.
Right.
But it's just interesting.
And I believe there's an opt-out after three, Brian. An opt-out after three. Player option after three.
Yeah, well, that's what Chris Paul has, too, and I don't think Chris Paul will be opting out.
I understand the Hornets' decision as far as not wanting to pay Kemba max or certainly Supermax money. Essentially, okay, let's be really expensive and mediocre. That's a bad place to be. What I don't get, though, is, like you said, why not think about this in advance and explore the trade market for them? And then, if you are moving on from Kemba, why are you overpaying Terry Rozier like that? I mean, obviously he's not as expensive, but you're like, if you're going to be cheap, be cheap. You know, you're going to be bad. So why are you
just
still relatively
fully embrace
expensive?
The cheapness? Right.
Yes, like it's called a rebuild where you strip things down, and you know, you try to get some assets and you try to manage your payroll so it's not expensive. It's just like they have no direction. They're just kind of stuck being a very blah team that, hey, nobody's going to notice.
Jackie, what was the feeling in the room when Danny Ainge looked at everybody with an alleged straight face and said, this was our plan A?
Right. Well, you know,
this is a classic. This always happens in coaching hires. We only offered one person the job, and that's this person sitting right here.
No, that's exactly right. And I think what happened was they're so bruised and so battered from the whole Kyrie Irving experience, and I'm not exaggerating, guys. I'm not. You know, it's the first time that I've seen some of the front office and ownership since I had written that story some weeks ago about Kyrie and how he put Brad Stevens through the ringer and some of the other details that I know that the franchise really didn't want public. So I was expecting perhaps a little blowback. You know, I got none. I got none. What I got
was
everybody.
The Celtics have been accused in the past of being okay with negativity coming out about players who leave, but you know.
Right. Well, but see, that's why I wanted to do it before he left.
Right.
Because, and it wasn't just him. You know, I criticized, as you know, Brian, the players that are still there. And the impression I got from everybody was it's just a sigh of relief because this has been a long ordeal for them. I think they've known for a lot longer than we did that Kyrie Irving wasn't going to be there, that things
were
not going right.
Well, Danny admitted what? He admitted he thought he was thinking about it in March. I will say he was probably thinking about it
way before that.
Before that, yeah.
Because things went south with Dan.
I was just going to say the KD Kyrie stuff had been going on since well before midseason. So, you know, if there's that kind of speculation out publicly, come on.
And things went bad with Danny and Kyrie kind of early. I'm finding this out now. And I don't really know the genesis of that. But anyway, so I think there was ownership was there. You know, I talked with a lot of them yesterday. There's a bunch of owners. And they're like, now it's a spin, of course, because they're not as good. And there's no way you can say they are. But I just think that it's been a really rugged year there. And I think everybody just wants to exhale and try to wallow in a little bit of positivity. Wallow is the wrong word. Soak in a little positivity. And certainly Kemba Walker went out of his way to provide that yesterday. I mean, I did ask him, look, it's great that you're not a rah-rah leader, that you're going to listen to everybody, but But these guys are young, and they get out of hand, and somebody needs to put them in their place. Can that be you? And he said, oh, yeah, don't worry about me. And he was telling me he learned it from Marvin Williams, of all people. I thought that was interesting, because you never know who the really quiet leaders are in locker rooms sometimes. So he claims that he's up for that task as well. We'll see. We'll see.
Well, he said, you know, it's interesting that he mentioned that thing about notoriety or attention.
Right.
Because when he was at UConn, he was one of the most beloved players in UConn history. And we're talking about a pretty storied history there. And
you're right. You know, Maui Classic is where it all, the legend began, right?
And his
remember
iconic,
the Maui Classic?
His iconic Big East tournament. And then obviously winning the title. And he's, you know, from New York City, Brooklyn, I believe. And so he
Rice High School.
Yeah. Right. He was sort of used to
get some folks mad at you.
Why is that?
You can't be getting New York neighborhoods wrong. Go on.
Well, I didn't remember if he was from Brooklyn or somewhere else. But anyway.
Well, here's the thing, Brian, though. It's funny you mentioned that, too, because one of the things Calhoun told me was that when the Maui Classic, which for those of you who don't remember, he just had three, like, otherworldly games. I believe he still holds the record for the Maui Classic for scoring in those games. And they were an unranked team going into that that preseason tournament, or early season tournament, I should say. They were an unranked team. Nobody was expecting anything. And he just went berserk. And of course, he was named the MVP and everybody wanted to talk to him. And the team is waiting on the bus, Brian, after the Maui Classic. It's hot. It's in Hawaii. There's no air conditioning on the bus. And they're all waiting. And they're waiting a long time because he has all these interviews and all these responsibilities. And they're waiting. And it would have been very easy for everybody to be cranky and tired and hot and like, let's get going. Instead, what happened was when Kemba walked onto the bus, everybody stood up and gave him the spontaneous standing ovation. And that's the kind
because he arrived at the bus. It was a brunch.
Well, maybe. Could be. You could say that. But, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that he – now, I still say he's got a challenge ahead of him. And I think he knows it because – it's too easy to blame Kyrie Irving for everything. Those young guys had their own designs on certain things. They have blood on their hands as well, and he's got to figure out a way to get them all back together and united and on the same page. Now, it will be easier without Kyrie, without Rozier, who got kind of noisy near the end. So we'll see. We'll see how they do going forward. In a perfect world, I can't see them winning a championship, but maybe they can end up as the number three seed in the East. This is being very, very optimistic. I still have concerns about them defensively. You lost Baines. You lost Horford. You lost Rozier, who was a very good defensive player. And your defense is your identity. So you've got some things to
should I tell? Can I tell my Maui Classic story the one year I went? It involves your boy, Austin Rivers, McMahon.
Oh, my boy, he is. You bet.
During the lockout, 2011, I went to the Maui Classic because why not? And
because you could.
There was, it actually ended up. The lockout ended up getting settled like within about 48 hours after it ended. But there was like probably 15 or 20 GMs there because again, why not? What else are they doing? And it was a loaded field that year. Kansas ended up playing Duke in the title game, but that was Austin Rivers' year at Duke. And it was early in the season. It's in Thanksgiving week, so it's like the second or third week of the season. And people really hadn't seen Austin a lot yet. By the way, there was a GM there in Maui who is still a GM of a team to this day, who was just flat out sleeping in the bleachers. I won't reveal who that was, but I'll tell you guys.
Is he still the GM of the same team?
That's a great follow-up question. I'm not going to comment on that. If I answered that, you'd probably be able to get it.
I gotcha.
Anyway, what I remember is Mason Plumlee was like this one of the leaders of the Duke team. I think he was a junior, and it was Austin. And Seth Curry was on that team, too.
Mm-hmm.
And remember who was on the Kansas team? A couple of guys who got drafted, but no end. I think maybe Thomas Robinson. So anyway, they're playing, and what I remember is everybody wants to see Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers was a lottery pick, and a lot of people thought he was a chance to be a top three pick at that point. And Doc was there because again, what else was he doing? Why not? And I remember
watch your son. Why not? Is right.
Right. They were playing Michigan and John Beilein, And Michigan had this little feisty guard named Trey Burke. Like I said, it was a loaded field.
Uh-huh.
So Austin would get the ball on the wing, and Plumlee would get position on the block, and he'd put his hand up and say, toss it down here, young man. And Austin would point and say, come up here and set a pick. And Plumlee would be like, no, throw it to me. And it happened like two or three times in about a four-possession span. And finally, Krzyzewski had to call timeout, and Plumlee like lost it, screaming at him. And kind of set the tone for early part of Austin Rivers' career.
Funny.
But
now he's your consummate professional role player. By the way, real quick on Boston. To me, mm-hmm. You can talk yourself into Kyrie, Kimba, you know, a little bit of a downgrade, but in terms of chemistry, like, okay, reasonable facsimile. The massive drop-off is Horford to Cantor. And obviously, Cantor can put up points and rebounds, but that's like, that's where you go from being a legitimate contender in the East to, you know, maybe you can get to the second round. And so, I mean, when Danny Ainge says plan A at 5:59 p.m. On June 30th, sure. But there's no way you can tell me that Al Horford leaving was plan A.
Well, Jackie, I don't know if you heard this, Celtics were, from what I am told, one of the teams that kind of stomped their feet about what they felt was tampering. Not with Kyrie, although that looked like it was lined up pretty far in advance. But with Horford, what would happen with Horford, from what I am told, really upset the Celtics, that they were thinking they were going to be able to negotiate with him, talk to him about a new contract, and all of a sudden it was like he already knew what his market was and was out of there.
Shenanigans. We all know how this works. Everybody tampers. How was it that Kemba Walker all of a sudden?
That's what I was going to say. That's what my follow-up was going to be.
They had their chance.
Go on. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
About Kemba. Yeah, no, but about Kemba, right? That's what you're going to say, right?
Yeah, the Mavericks basically were like, yeah, boy, that last look in Boston, and you know they had to shift. But to your point about Horford.
Well, the Horford thing, was that, you know, they were trying to negotiate a new contract with Horford, and Horford, like, you know, it seemed to operate like he already had offers in his pocket. So I would say it was probably good agenting.
Let me say this. They were surprised, as we were, that the money was available to Horford for the four-year deal they got. Now, as you know, subsequent reporting revealed that fourth year is not completely guaranteed. Because at the time, Elton Brand was getting killed for that deal. He was getting killed because that fourth year was being reported as guaranteed, and it isn't. It is.
Yeah, it keeps getting put out there, even by us. I mean, I'm not pointing any figures. It keeps getting, you know, pointed out as 109, but it's, I believe, $97 million guaranteed. Still, three and a half years.
Still great money.
Still pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Still great. Still great deal. But, you know, if you're Elton Brand, everyone's like, well, why are you paying him all that money? He's going to be this age and whatever. And the Celtics were not willing to. So, they can be disappointed about what happened with Al Horford. But in the 11th hour, as you guys know, they were still trying to get him back in a sign and trade and a three-way thing that the Nets were like, yeah, we're not helping you. Forget it. Why would we help you?
So. Well, speaking of sort of, you know, interesting contracts, Chris Paul, guys, Woj had a story yesterday, and I've talked to some people involved here. Chris Paul, it sounds like, now knows he's going to have to start the season with the Thunder and is settled on it and at peace with it. We'll see if he comes out and talks about it. I think that his family is going to relocate from Houston to Los Angeles, which would be difficult for him because he'd be away from them. But he just doesn't know where he's going to play. So I think he's come to peace. And Chris, this is kind of dangerous because you can upset Chris if you, as McMahon knows, if you say something that implies how Chris is thinking and he doesn't really think that way, he gets upset. So I'm walking on eggshells a little bit. But I think he's at a place where he's like, okay, I'm going to go play for the Thunder and do my best.
Well, this is a case of he did such a good job fighting for old geezers like himself to be able to sign longer deals, you know, in their later years, that he's now, it's now, you know, I mean, tough. He gets that $44 million in the fourth year of his deal, but that also makes him extremely difficult to trade, and Oklahoma City clearly isn't just going to move him to, you know, they're not going to sacrifice steps in their rebuilding process just to move Chris Paul
to a situation that
would be better.
I want to talk about that, but first I'm going to say that while I have been told that Oklahoma City and Miami haven't, like, had formal talks about a Chris Paul trade, they obviously had talks about the Russell Westbrook trade. And what I heard about that was one of the conversations that happened in that negotiation before the Houston deal happened. The Thunder were willing to discuss giving the Heat back their 2021 and maybe even their 2023 picks as part of the deal. But they wanted the 2024 and 2026 picks that they got from Houston unprotected, and I think they wanted pick swaps too. So, you know, they were willing to talk about that. But the other thing I heard was that it was, you know, basically, you know, if Chris wanted to get traded to the Heat now, he would maybe have had to been willing to decline his player option for that 2021-2022 season. Now, the way things are shaping up, the next big free agent class will be in 2021, and the Heat want to have cap space that summer. And so basically the sort of the horse trade that was sort of whispered out of the side of the mouth was, hey, Chris, if you're willing to forego your player option, that $44 million option, maybe we could start talks. But obviously, why?
So all that fighting you did as a players union president,
clearly.
Throw that out
clearly.
The window.
Crazy.
Clearly, I mean,
good luck.
Of course not. But I mean, you have to ask the question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if he was desperate,
to get out.
And so
I don't know why he'd be desperate to get out of there. Would he? Why?
Well, he's not. Clearly.
Because
he's not.
How many years left does he have to, like, you know, they could be a decent team, sure, but Chris Paul, the lone blemish is that he's never been to a finals or won a championship. And so how many years left does he have to really be, you know, a guy who can impact a team's ability to get to that point? And so, you know, to spend
it in Oklahoma City
for a team that's on a rebuild, that's tough. When honestly,
yeah,
like,
I get
what's
that,
he got,
like,
left? A year, 2 years at that level?
Right, but my point is, you're where you're at. And you don't have a lot of clout anymore.
I think everybody can to associate with this on a certain level. You have to make the best of your situation. You know, the choices that you made lead to this. And so, okay, this is what you have in your hands now. I mean, this always excites Andrew when I say this, but I often compare situations in the NBA to poker. And, you know, you get this hand, and this is the hand you have. And you have to do the best with that hand. You can't control what the cards that came to your hand, but you can control how you play them. So I do think that if he analyzes the situation, his best move is to come to Oklahoma City happy and smiling and devoted and being totally bought in and making himself look like he's still got great basketball in him. And there were, there were stretches last year where he played great.
He's healthy, he's still a very, very, very good player. He's no longer, you know, an elite top five, top ten player in the league. But, like, I know, for example, Daryl Morey considers him to be a top 25 player in the league. I mean, he's still, and you're going to have to obviously manage him. He's going to miss 20 games. You hope he can stay healthy for a playoff run. But even without the ability to blow by guys off the dribble, Chris Paul is still a winning piece for sure. Just not a $40 million piece.
Right. So what you do is you go to Oklahoma City, you do what you got to do for as long as you need to do it, and then you hope that at some point Oklahoma City does right by you and trade you, you know, maybe by February, maybe sooner, to a situation that's going to work for you. And that's the only choice you have. It's just...
Yeah, but you can't go there and sulk. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You can't be a diva. You know, you just can't be. If you want this to have a happy ending, and I think of Carmelo, and I don't think Carmelo is a diva, but I do think he just could never embrace, and it'll be different for Chris Paul, because whoever gets Chris Paul, wherever he does end up, I think he would be a starter, but like Carmelo could just, he could only subvert his ego so far. He just could not accept being a player that came off the bench. He just couldn't. And so what's happened is what should be a remarkable Hall of Fame level career.
Who, me?
That we should have been celebrating.
Famous.
Now.
Famous line.
Right? Right, exactly. Now, you know, you're a punchline now. And that's a shame. He deserves better. But yet he has to accept some blame for the way this has ended for him.
Yeah, there was like this melancholiness over All-Star Weekend. They had a, you know, farewell dinner for Dwayne Wade, and everybody was up there making speeches, and Melo's up there making a really impassioned speech about Wade, and you know, it wasn't hard to see he was kind of talking about himself in a way. But
of course.
I want to talk a little bit about Chris Paul's. I think the genesis of this was a story that Ethan Strauss wrote in The Athletic. I could be wrong about that, but that's where I first saw it. But there's been some grousing about Chris Paul and his leadership of the union, and that, you know, this is some comeuppance, and you know, he only took care of the Supermax players, and you know, now he gets what he deserves, etc. You know, he was sort of stuck, and I'm not sure I agree with that.
I know a lot of guys are cashing checks from 2016 that are middle class players who got paid upper class price.
Well, let's just right off the top, the one rule change that Chris Paul enacted that absolutely put money in his pocket was raising the age limit for guaranteed contracts from 36 to 38. There was a rule; it was called the over 36 rule, and you couldn't have a guaranteed contract past the season where you had your 36th birthday, a multi-year guaranteed contract. And the reason that was because they wanted to prevent any shenanigans on, like, back-paying a player. Like, we can only afford to give you our minimum, but we'll give you a two-year minimum. Or we'll give you, we can only afford to pay you our mid-level, but we'll give it to you for 3 years. We know you're going to retire in a year, and we'll pay you that while you're in retirement. It was a way to, you know, get around people who were trying to subvert the cap on older players. And so he lifted that age requirement from age 36 to age 38. And that enabled him to sign this contract with the Rockets, which in his year 37, he was able to guarantee himself $44 million. He could have guaranteed himself more. He could have gotten a fifth year until he was age 38. But he,
could you
but
imagine?
He didn't. Now, it's not, I mean,
and that,
who knows?
And that now has make it, extra, I mean, that, if this is, if he's got 2 years left of max money, it is so much easier to trade him. That's the reason, I think, that year is the reason why he's going to probably have to start the season and spend who knows how long in a quasi-rebuilding situation in Oklahoma City.
And that $44 million he is going to really earn because he's stuck in Oklahoma City, you know, stuck in quotes. I don't necessarily know if he feels that way, but, you know, he probably wasn't thrilled with this. And his reputation, according to some of these stories, is taking a bit of a hit within the union because of that rule that he changed. And so to get that last payday, to get that last $44 million, he's going to have to take some grief for it. So that is, you know, that money did not come for free. I don't think that's a fair way to look at his tenure. You know, he was the one who pushed through Michelle Roberts, who was a sort of a total game-changer hire for the union. He basically made that hire. Some people still blame her. I still don't understand the way the union approached the cap spike, but there were many players who benefited from that. But that's another topic. The other thing that he did, in addition to creating more supermaxes for guys like Westbrook and Harden, guys who signed the supermax early, and like Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, he enabled them to get paid more faster. I don't think any of those guys look sideways at Chris Paul, and I don't think any of those guys, you would say, are not fairly compensated. Okay, John Wall signed it. We didn't have a glass ball that showed that John Wall was going to tear his Achilles. Nobody held a gun to the Wizard's head to give it to him. But, you know, I think all those guys think that they are, you know, they were stars who are getting fairly compensated. And just, I'll finish this up and then I'll let you go, McMahon. But the other thing that he did as the head of the union in the last CBA was he raised all the minimums. He gave a raise to all of the players on the minimum. If you're a veteran, the top salary for a veteran minimum used to be the year before this CBA, it was, I believe, $1.4 million. So if you know if you're these one of these guys who had didn't have many options and you had to take you know whatever was out there, you got $1.4 million, not a bad salary. Well, now I believe it's $2.6 million, or $2.7 maybe even now if you're a veteran free agent. And he also boosted all of the rookie scales. And by the way, it wasn't just the veteran minimums. All the minimums got boosted. Even if you're a second or third year player. And then he boosted all the rookie scales. And then he even negotiated it so the players who were on rookie contracts that had already signed would get their contracts adjusted upward to the new rookie scale so that they wouldn't be penalized. So, yes, he threw some carrots at some of the guys at the top end, and he definitely benefited himself $44 million probably by that rule change, because I don't think the Rockets are giving him a four-year deal otherwise. But he also took care of the bottom end of the pay scale just as much, and in aggregate probably sent more money to that group as a collective than he did to the guys at the Supermax. So I don't know what happened in the individual meetings and what he did. He also, by the way, boosted the mid-levels. He helped create more mid-levels and boosted the value of the mid-levels for the middle-class player. So I don't necessarily agree with him being branded as only taking care of the upper class. All right, McMahon, I didn't mean to filibuster, but I just did. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, anonymous criticism of Chris Paul, you always kind of have to take with a grain of salt because, let's be honest, he pisses off a lot of people. Like, he's not necessarily a beloved figure among guys who play with him or against him. And so, you know, are there some guys maybe who didn't get what they wanted this summer and you know, they don't like Chris Paul and it's easy to point the finger at him? Sure, but I agree with you. Like, if you're going to be nitpicking Chris Paul, like, I don't know. I don't feel like he is hosed over players in his role as the players' union president.
Well, the middle class, clearly somebody in the middle class talked to Ethan for his story and you know suggested that guys were laughing when Chris Paul got traded, whether you know who those players
were. No, I believe
are,
they were.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, I think no matter what his salary was, they would have laughed at him because I don't think he's popular.
Yeah. Well, that's partly because he's the guy that's always right. And nobody likes the person that's always right. They like you once in a while, say, hey, you know what? That was on me. My fault. My bad. And that never happens. And that's always what's bothered people.
Well, he did get elected and then reelected. Somebody had to cast a vote for that. And the middle class has more members than the upper class. So the middle class got him. The middle class and lower class of players got him elected.
Right. They didn't, but you know that, Brian. You complain about the boss all day. But then when someone says, okay, you want to do it? No, you go right ahead.
Right.
So that's just life.
Well, you know, for a long time between what? Like when Patrick Ewing was the president of the union in around the turn of the century until Chris Paul took over, it was guys more like Derek Fisher who were mid-level type players. And there's no question that when Chris and LeBron took over, that they did pay attention to the top players getting taken care of. And you know, if you're a top player, I can't blame you. Speaking of top players, Rick Bucher from the Bleacher Report had an interesting quote from an anonymous GM. And I don't want to get too much into this. I mean, I quote executives anonymously all the time. So, you know, I mean, I know that we can say tisk tisk, but this is a reality. If you want opinions, you're going to have to protect the sources and whatever. But he said the quote was that Kawhi Leonard doesn't really make the players around him better.
Yeah, and Wendy, you know that GM that you said was snoozing through the old Maui Classic? This GM must have been snoozing through the entire freaking playoffs. Like, Rip Van Winkle through an entire playoff run. Because how many parades had the Raptors had before Kawhi just had one of the best playoff runs in recent memory? I kind of feel like he lifted Toronto to being a very good team to being a champion, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, is that required? I mean, like, I don't necessarily.
What does that mean?
Exactly. I don't necessarily, like, does Kawhi do for teammates what LeBron has done for teammates? I would say no. I would say no. I mean, Kawhi's role on the team.
Right, but what Kawhi does defensively for his teammates is more significant than what LeBron does defensively for his teammates. I mean, you know, this is semantics to me. He's not a black hole. I would never call Kawhi Leonard a black hole. I will tell you this. One thing I did notice when he left San Antonio, because I was curious, would he play differently? And he does play differently. He does dominate the ball a little more. He takes more shots. I don't think that's breaking news to anybody, right? But I don't think he's a guy that people say, man, I don't want to play with him. I've never heard anybody say that. Have you?
Well, I definitely – the way he handled his free agency and the way he operated with the Raptors, which was I am going to rest 20 games, and when I'm on the court, we're going to operate, you know, with me. I mean, that was their plan for him, by the way. It wasn't like he came in and said, this is how we're going to run the offense.
Right,
that was their plan for him, and Nick Nurse – will be getting a ring in a few months because of that plan. I understand why that could be said, because he doesn't do it like maybe some other players do. But I mean, like, Steph Curry has subverted his career a little bit to help teammates. Durant certainly did in various ways to help teammates. Kawhi isn't that classic character, but how can you argue with the results?
It goes back to, so like, I always thought for Kawhi Leonard, the worst thing in the world for him was Tim Duncan, because Tim Duncan sacrificed money, shots, fame, attention, what have I left out? Glory, you know.
Yeah.
And so that became
free
a standard
agency.
That
I mean, he
free agency,
stuck with him.
Right? Almost.
Yeah.
Right, almost went to Orlando with Doc Rivers. Much closer than people will ever realize how close
one
he
of
was
the greatest
to going. Imagine,
sliding doors moments in NBA history.
Imagine if how history would have changed if he had gone to Orlando, huh? But anyway, I digress. So Kawhi was not that guy, as it turned out, for the San Antonio Spurs. That did not make him a villain. It just makes him a guy that didn't want to live in the very long shadow of one of the most selfless players in NBA history. It doesn't make him a bad guy. I don't think.
I think one of the things that the Clippers successfully apparently tapped into, although I think the Raptors had the same idea, was that Kawhi didn't want to be in the box that they constructed for him in San Antonio. It's a beautiful box. It's a jewel-encrusted box. You know, the guy running the show is one of the greatest coaches of all time. But one of the things that sort of became known was that even though his personality matched the way the Spurs love their stars, the way he wanted to play didn't match. And I think the Clippers picked up on that, and they were honing their pitch for months. I think this was part of their pitch was, we're going to let you construct your own scenario here. The Raptors kind of beat them to it, though, because they let them do it. But Kawhi is going to be who he wants to be. That has become blatantly clear. And, I mean, Kobe was that way. I mean, you wouldn't hear a lot of people say that Kobe made teammates better, but he is adored and revered by, you know, Kobe is still adored. I feel like more players adore Kobe than adore LeBron. You think I'm wrong? You know?
No,
and
I think
yet,
you're right.
The way LeBron plays, in theory, would be more attractive to play with than with Kobe.
Right. And let's get back to Kawhi for a second here. Let's not muddy the waters as to why Kawhi Leonard is no longer with San Antonio. And it still has to do with how they handled that injury, and maybe we'll never know the full story. But that is the crux of why he's not there anymore. I'm convinced of it. You'll never convince me of anything differently.
Yeah, I just... I don't know. I think the Clippers felt like that was going to be their secret weapon. was they were going to present him you know, the idea that they were going to build it around him. And when the Raptors did that and then won a championship, they were like, damn. Because I really do think that the Clippers were really fearful that they were not going to get him. And there was and the one crazy thing is, you know, I've heard complaints in the days after the signing. Heard complaints from the Lakers that they got played. I heard complaints from the Raptors that, you know, that Kawhi came in and asked for the sun, the moon, the stars, and then left him at the altar. And, you know, but I kind of think they were all still in the game, and they all felt like they were still in the game. If Toronto did not still feel like they were in the game, they would not have sent the plane for him. They would not have done the big presentation. If the Lakers didn't think that they were still in the game, they would not have delayed the Anthony Davis trade like they did to try to wait to see if they could get him. And if the Clippers didn't think they were in the, you know, if the Clippers thought that they had him locked up, they would not have given up 5 first round picks to get Paul George. They just wouldn't have. They paid that premium because they were uncertain. And if Kawhi kept all three teams uncertain enough to give concessions and to do what he wanted, then I think it was one of the great negotiations that you could ever dream of.
Yeah, and look,
isn't that funny how everybody wants? But isn't it funny how everybody wants to rag on Uncle Dennis, because it sure worked out pretty well for him, didn't he?
He got what he wanted and who he wanted to play with. But yeah, if you're the Clippers, did you give up too much if it's just Paul George? Yeah, you could argue that. But not if it's Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. I mean, if you look at that as you made a trade to Oklahoma City for essentially a package deal, you do that every time.
You know, the Thunder situation was a little bit strange. Let's say Kawhi, let's say that the Clippers drew the line at 2 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps, the same deal that they got for Russell Westbrook. Let's say they're like, listen, we don't believe that Kawhi, we don't believe that you're going to the Lakers. We don't believe you're staying with the Raptors. We're not giving up Shea Gildas-Alexander and all this stuff. Our offer is 2 first-round picks and Shea Gildas-Alexander for Paul George. Take it or leave it. And Kawhi was like, all right, I leave it. I sign with the Lakers. Like, that was on, like, I think that could have happened. I don't think that's what Kawhi preferred, but because that threat existed, they were able to drive that deal. But if that had happened, let's say Kawhi signs with the Lakers, you don't think that within 24 to 72 hours, the fact that Paul George had demanded a trade was going to get public? And once that happened, was going to put immense pressure on the Thunder, and possibly drive his price down? Because, by the way, if you examine Paul George's contract, he has 2 guaranteed years left. If he plays this season, all of a sudden the stress starts hitting, because you're like, is he staying or do we have to trade him? So the Thunder would have lost leverage, and they wouldn't have dreamed of being able to get anything like they got. So the Thunder were under some pressure to close the deal too, because it was an expiring leverage. You know, it had it not closed. So the fact that all of that was created in this scenario, created by Dennis Robertson, who everybody calls Uncle Dennis, but I'm going to call by his real name because I'm pretty impressed with how he handled all this. Now, the teams were annoyed with the process and annoyed by some of the things that Dennis Robertson did, but how can you look at what Kawhi got and say that, you know, he didn't do the best he possibly could for his client, who happens to be his nephew?
Exactly.
Yeah, so do you care at all about this? Andrew will probably tell me to cut this later. Do you guys care at all about this Jim Dolan versus Steve Ballmer lawsuit situation?
You know, I care more about Jim Dolan versus the New York Daily News and just how consistently petty and, you know, just like a sorry old schoolyard bully Dolan comes across as.
See, I don't care about that. I don't care about that. I care about...
Well, I've been banned before, so I've got little empathy, unlike you.
I see what you're saying. Well, the banning itself is reprehensible. but the feud I don't really care about. Is that, are we okay with that? Am I okay to say that?
I do think there's something way off about Jim Dolan, the Knicks owner on the East Coast, meddling into the Clippers arena situation on the West Coast.
Well, it has nothing
and
to do with
the Adam
Knicks.
Silver, that's not, I understand that, but if I'm Adam Silver, I don't need an owner of one franchise on one coast meddling with the arena situation of another owner on another coast.
All right, Jackie, I'm going to say what happened, and you can vote whether this should remain in the podcast or not.
Okay.
The story came out in the New York Daily News. What it clearly is, knowing that the New York Daily News is a sworn adversary of Jim Dolan, that's
right.
Probably why these depositions arrived at the New York Daily News. But
you bet.
I care more about the contents of it. So Jim Dolan sued Steve Ballmer because Steve Ballmer wants to build his beautiful new arena. And by the way,
right.
I was hearing somebody who was telling me the plans of it. Like it, the design of the arena is like a big ball going through a basket. Like it's designed to be total basketball. Like the design
That's
of the
cool.
thing. But they're going to build it basically down the street from the Forum, the old place where the Lakers used to play, which is now owned by Jim Dolan, or I technically Madison Square Garden owns it. And so they told the Forum had at least a parking lot. And the mayor said, hey, we want to turn this into a technology park. Would you mind letting your lease expire on this parking lot? You're going to have a plenty of parking when the new L.A. Rams stadium opens. Anyway, like, yeah, we're going to give up our lease. Go build your technology park. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't for a technology park. It was to build Steve Ballmer's arena, which in theory
right.
could take concert dates away from the Forum. So they sued. But here's what I'm so fascinated by. All right? In these depositions that got leaked to the New York Daily News, Jim Dolan gave $1 million to the guy running for mayor against the guy
him.
Who did this
right.
deal with Ballmer, and Ballmer gave money to the current mayor to get reelected, and the mayor did
Crazy.
Get reelected. And so not only is this a battle over the future of the Clippers and where they're going to be, but this is like a full-scale, like, Cold War, where they're giving political donations, and then it was admitted in the depositions that Dolan tried to go to Jeannie Buss, or at least Madison Square Garden tried
right.
to go to Jeannie Buss and get the Lakers to undercut the Clippers and move to the Forum and undercut it. I think all this palace intrigue is amazing. Am I totally off base?
No, I think it is, but it's just that I think really for people in New York, this is so salacious because they already all hate James Dolan and want him to get mm-hmm. rid of the team, and this just further cements every belief they have. I mean, I've read all these stories too, and it sounds like in a lot of cases he was trying to fight back, but without the knowledge of the area and how it works and what was going on, it seemed to me like he didn't, you know, he needed a reconnaissance crew to keep him up to speed on what exactly was going on.
Well, the guy only got like 20% of the vote. As usual, Jim Dolan backed the wrong horse.
The wrong guy, exactly.
I just found it interesting.
Yeah.
Andrew will probably cut this out. All right, you guys don't care. I think it's amazing. And
no, I'm not sure right now where it leads us, right?
Can you imagine what it's like to be Steve Ballmer? Like, okay, the owners' meetings were last week. Sorry, the Board of Governors.
Board of Governors,
Can you imagine Steve Ballmer? He's sitting in the room. He's just outfoxed the Raptors, who are hopping mad. He's outfoxed the Lakers, who it's also come out in legal documents. Jeannie Buss calls him balls behind his back for Ballmer. And he's being sued by Jim Dolan, who he's kind of outfoxed already, and he's probably going to get this arena done, is my guess. And he's worth $40 billion, and he got Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. I know he doesn't have the ring, but he's got to be, you know, the cat that ate the
canary. I like his chances for a ring over these next couple of years.
Yeah, I do too. So, all right, so We are going to go on a bit of a hiatus here. If there's, you know, the need to do podcasts, we are going to do them, but the NBA is slowing down. I am going to cover Team USA this summer, what's left of it. Anthony Davis already backed out. We'll see if any other top players backed out, but they have training camp in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas with a bunch of top players. So there might be some stuff that comes out of there. And then I'm going to try to go to China with them. McMahon, they let you into China. I'm having difficulty getting a visa. So maybe.
Really?
They're not exactly waving American journalists over to China right now. Maybe I shouldn't even talk about it.
Here's what you do.
They let me in and not you?
Well,
here's what you do, Brian.
Different.
Call up. I'm going to tell you what to do. Call Bill Duffy. Bill Duffy is still a god there because he represented Yao. He knows all the people in the Chinese Basketball Federation. He's the one that got me a visa within a matter of days when I went over there.
All right, your man. Well,
I'm telling you, he's got some clout. Bill, if you're listening, give my friend Wendy a call.
Things are getting complicated. So anyway, so we do have some basketball left this summer, but we're going to go on a little hiatus. We only did one podcast this week, so we'll see. So stick with us, but thank you. For listening throughout this whole year. We had a record-breaking year in terms of downloads. We really appreciate your support. Jackie and Tim, you guys are my A1A and 1B on this. Thank you for a great season.
Yeah, we're your plan A, like Danny Ainge just executed his plan A, Wendy. We know.
That's right. And that's
She's
right.
Kim, but I'm Ennis Cantor. I'm just a troll.
When I think of you, I think of Cantor. No defense, big guy, no defense, great attitude.
Cheap shots on social media.
That's right. So thank you very much for your support this season. And, you know, we're not going to go away for months, but we're going to slow down a little bit because I think Andrew Hahn would like to be done with us. So thank you.
Here's what I predict. Here's what I predict, Brian. Here's what I predict. We will be doing a podcast next week.
You probably will.
Well,
now that we've said that.
You might be. I'll be in Hawaii.
Something's going to happen. Something's going to happen, and we're going to have to do a podcast. Just predicting.
All right. Thank you,
all right, my friends,
for listening. And I will talk to everybody soon. Take care.
There's
Aloha, McMahon.
Gracias. Wait, that's not Hawaiian.